This is the Secrets of Attorney Marketing podcast from Speakeasy Marketing. Discover how to enhance your reputation as an attorney and outmarket your competitors. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast and post a review.
All right. Well, good afternoon. This is Tracy Murda with the Secrets of Attorney Marketing podcast. And today I am very excited to have a special guest, attorney John Cannon. Welcome, John. How are you today?
I'm well. How are you doing?
I am, you know, doing as best we can. We are at the end of virtual school week. I don't even know at this point. So it's kind of
circa 2020.
Right, exactly. Well, and that's what we actually wanted to talk to you about today. So for our listeners, John is going to give us some info on how he's been navigating throughout the pandemic and talking about maybe some, you know, different experiences you've had as far as switching things up, keeping the business going. And then obviously, you know, I'd love to hear what's actually happening locally for you as far as courts and things like that in Oklahoma. So why don't we start out with, take me back to March, John, and when this all kind of started to blow up as far as COVID-19 and how it started to impact your business. Was it like immediately you noticed any sort of drops in business or things started to go crazy? It was, you know, how did it just kind of walk me through the beginning for you?
Sure. So initially, like most people, we didn't know what this was going to mean. And we had a number of people that fell off of the radar that were potential clients before. And we did see a decent drop in potential new clients in all of our software and just the feel. It seemed like fewer people were reaching out. And that seemed to continue to be a trend into the end of the spring and in the early summer. We're a pretty small firm. We're early on in our process and trying to grow. At that time, we had one associate and a few staff people. And we've recently added a rock star new attorney to the team. She got her bar results last week, and now she's a full lawyer. And we saw a lot of pain points and how are we going to deal with only seeing people electronically or keeping them safe, and how do we keep the firm safe and the families that are connected to our firm.
Yeah, because what's interesting is I think even myself, I'm probably guilty of it. I think a lot of us have probably already forgotten as far as, you know, I just remember when March came and talking to attorneys right after, you know, some of the nationwide shutdowns started to happen. And again, we didn't know what this was. We didn't know. I mean, I think there was a lot of fear out there. So I remember attorneys saying, yeah, I'm meeting clients in my lobby and they're on one side of the door and I'm on the other. Like, I mean, it was, or meeting them in the parking lot. Like they, you know, you had to go to extremes because we just didn't know, you know, anything about this. So when you first started, you know, talking within your staff and within your other, you know, members of your organization about what to do with, you know, virtual, I'm sure, John, tell me, is a lot of your interaction with clients, I'm sure pre-COVID anyway, a lot of it's closing the deal because you are face-to-face, because you have that persona and personality. So what were your discussions like?
So I think like most people in sales, it's relational. And when you're sitting down with the person and you can look each other in the eye and feel that relationship developing, you know, whether someone knows, likes, and trusts you is easier in person. And there's a reason law firms have buildings, because they're impressive. They give people a sense of comfort knowing that this firm's going to be around because they've got this building and they've got their brand and they've got their sign. And it's, you know, it's a real place, so I can trust them with my life and my money. And that gets more complicated when you're meeting with people in a different space. And just from our experience and from talking to friends and colleagues across the country and law firms dealing with the same issues, I decided to put a wall around our office almost immediately. And so we've locked the door during the day. We do no in-person consultations for potential clients. All of our consultations are by telephone or by video conferencing. And we have found that video conferencing with people is a pretty good replacement for them meeting you in person. And I have found that our brand and our website and our presence on media sites and reviews on Google and Yelp and things like that, that helps people have the comfort and trust with us and other firms to know, okay, this is a real law firm, this is a real lawyer, without me seeing their shiny diplomas on the wall. And that's been helpful, but it's still been a serious pain point, and we're still dealing with it now. And when do we start letting people come in the office again, or do we, is something we're dealing with currently. But we've been doors shut to potential clients for 6 months, and we've still been getting business, but it's a new world right now.
Oh, it is. I mean, there's, I've heard from attorneys, and I'd like to hear your comments on this too, when it comes to the Zoom meetings or whatever, you know, web platform you choose to do your video meetings, there are a lot of advantages as far as, you know, you aren't having to travel anywhere. A client isn't having to travel anywhere. There's a lot of time saved. There's a lot of things you can show them that you could show them in person as well. So there's a lot of comparisons there. The only thing I wonder is, have you run into any, not so much tech issues, but resistance from clients when it comes to those video calls or even getting them? Like, I'm thinking about trying to like explain it to my mother, even if it was just a link, you know, she'd be having issues with it. So are there any, you know, was there any resistance that you felt from it?
Absolutely. And I think that's something that if we look, you know, further back than you or I personally experienced, there's always resistance to new things and new technology. But I would echo what you said a moment ago, that I think there'll be law firms and businesses that continue to use these tools forever going forward. We've had many people that will call in, well, I don't have a computer, I don't know how to do one of those meetings, and I can't do that. And so we start off with asking people that because we feel there's a better connection when you can look a potential attorney in the eye and decide if you, again, know, like, and trust them. But for those people, we always give them the option of doing a telephone consult if they're more comfortable with that or if it's easier for them. But we found that, like you were just saying, clients that are from far away, we've had almost a better close rate when immediately we're telling them we're comfortable with meeting with them by phone or by a Zoom conference. There's none of that pressure anymore. We want you in the office. And I think that's something we'll keep beyond COVID or beyond a virus vaccine or any of that, allowing people, if they want to, sure, we'll just set up a video meeting for you. You don't have to drive to us from wherever you are.
Right. Exactly. I think that's absolutely one reason I would prefer video is, I mean, I work from home, even busting up my day just to do, you know, a little pickup run or something here and there. I don't want to do it. That would be like such a small thing that would maybe make me go, eh, this guy's closer, I'm just going to go here, which is terrible, but I'm sure a lot of people feel that way.
Yeah, one thing I would just add that, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go.
I would just say that even with staff, there's a level of comfort in being able to walk down the hall and see a person in their office at their desk. But we have employees that will, it's better for them on a certain day to work from home, and we trust each other. And so they do that, and we're able to see if they're productive or not with tools that we have in place. And really, in the virtual world we have now, and with the multiple subcontractors we use for our firm, it really gives you the opportunity for people to work from everywhere. And so we're trying to add that into our culture too.
I love that. And you'll probably find you'll get better quality people who enjoy their job more when they have, you know, certain freedoms, or even especially right now when none of us know what's happening with schools and taking care of our kids. I mean, just to have, you'll have happier employees, that's for sure.
Right.
So one thing that I personally, over this course of the COVID situation, I did end up meeting with an attorney on Zoom for estate planning matters for my father. And he was actually in Minnesota where my dad lives and I was here. But going back to the video, one thing that I found really useful was, for one, my brothers and sisters and I are spread all over the, you know, state or country. So we were able to all hop in and, you know, go to the Zoom, write on a whiteboard for us and show us the timeline of this is what you should do. I mean, do you think that those tools, I mean, or is there anything really special or cool that you were able to do with your props or keep that that client engagement when you're over the Zoom?
We're certainly trying to do those things. We're about to close on a new building and hoping to set up a place to do virtual consults so that we can have a whiteboard behind the video or have more things that we can show as demonstratives, like we're presenting to a jury, presenting to potential business customers. But going back to what you said earlier, I found the ability to share my screen and show someone the docket on their case if, you know, they're the respondent in a divorce, or show them the docket in their criminal case and what it looks like's happened so far, and pull up a statute and show them what a statute says. And that's, again, building that know, like, trust. They see that on in the spur of the moment, they ask a question, and the attorneys in our office have the competency to, in a moment, pull up the right answer and be able to show them that we're not making it up. This is the law. It's also helped with closing. We now have almost every client's contract is electronic. We send it to them. They e-sign. And so during video conferencing, we'll pull up our intake software. We can show them their quote-unquote client file, building that relationship. You're not just a potential client. We already have a file for you.
Yeah.
And show them what their contract looks like. Show them rules of how we run the business. Show them, chat with them in the video conference, the link to the payment page for our website. Give them
that is
a
brilliant
link during the call that they can make payment on the retainers and other services. Like
that
iQualify.
A great idea.
Fortify Lending.
Because I hear also in talking, you know, with a lot of my attorneys I work with, that, you know, part of when we try and boil it down, where are you losing the potential client? Is it, you know, when you hang up the phone? Is it when they walk out of your office? Is it just not getting back to them? And a lot of people have come back to us and said, you know, when I show them the agreement and they say, okay, I'm going to go think about it for a day or so, and then they just never come back. To be able to have that, you know, one-on-one engagement and say, all right, walk you through it. Let me show you where it is. I mean, that almost kind of puts it in their hands of like, you know, this is it. We're already working together. It gives that sense. I'm sure your close rate probably is a lot better as well from that.
It is better, but it's one of the weaknesses in our systems. And we're trying to improve that. We have a huge number of leads each month, and we don't close on nearly enough of them. So being completely candid, that's something we're trying to improve our follow through on and improve the system of how we follow up with people by identifying the person in the office that has that task and making sure they get the information in the right time so that they can do the follow through and try and increase our closure on those people that want to talk to family or want to think about the price, or they're going to talk to other lawyers no matter what before they make a decision.
And you'll always have those, I'm sure, to some degree. That's just kind of the nature of the biz. But yeah, it's interesting that you bring that up. But I appreciate you actually, you know, disclosing that, because a lot of the attorneys that we're talking to in the series that we're doing here with the podcast and our newsletter, that's really the point, is that we are trying to get good ideas from you and also give good ideas to you. Same with everyone who's listening to the show and who's reading our newsletters. That's what this is all about, is, you know, sharing what works for you, and then you'll be reading about things from other attorneys across the country that, you know, maybe there are some people that have pointers on, you know, some of your weaker points. And that's, I think, really an important thing right now, is that there's enough business to go around. We just all kind of need to join in and help each other, you know, where we can, especially with this uncharted of the virtual world that we're in. One of the things I would like to hear about from you is specifically what has happened with the courts in Oklahoma, as far as, you know, when did they shut down? Have they reopened? And what that experience has been like for you and your, when it comes to interacting with court personnel, holding, I guess, first appearances, or I'm not even sure. Why don't you take it away and kind of give me that, an idea?
Yeah, so a sampling of the courts that we work in includes Federal District Court, the 10th Circuit, which is a federal appellate court, military courts, magistrate federal court, state district court, municipal courts, and other administrative agencies. And that's quite a list. And every single one in each jurisdiction has a different procedure for what they're doing during the pandemic. I can't tell you the exact date that the court started closing down, but it stopped us in being able to resolve family cases. It stopped us in being able to resolve our clients' criminal cases. Now, one nice thing is that people we know stopped getting speeding tickets. I won't call out any specific people that I know, but that was a nice thing during the pandemic, because most of the local police stopped giving out speeding tickets. They gave warnings. But other than that benefit, it made things complicated in every single case. And so we've been doing our best to triage that and maintain client relationships. We're trying to have at least a monthly check-in with every client. And one thing we try and do is have a weekly status meeting for each type of case that we handle. So a family status meeting or pipeline meeting, a criminal defense, military justice pipeline meeting, and a personal injury or civil case pipeline meeting. And in those meetings, we're making sure that someone has reached out and connected with each of those clients at least once a month. So we're maintaining that because each client is in a different space, going through different things, different problems, and each of them want their problem taken care of and taken care of now. And so much of that was outside of our control. So we've tried very hard to stay on top of that for each client, and we've not been perfect, but I think most of our clients have been happy with how we've stayed in contact with them and kept them updated despite what's going on in the world around us and the courts in Oklahoma. And I could go into detail about specific things I've seen in the courthouses if you'd like.
Yeah, I would love to hear that.
So at first, they were doing no meetings at all. And some of the counties attempted to do secure meeting rooms through BlueJeans or Skype or Zoom or the Google meeting rooms. And that had some success and some lack of success. And I found that the bar in general, attorneys were frustrated with the lack of aggressive progress in those areas. And some courts were able to continue working on cases because they were setting up those things, and some just came to a complete standstill. And then late in the summer, about a month and a half ago, we started to see staggered docketing, which I'm a huge fan of. I hope we keep that. So as opposed to a 9 o'clock docket and a 1:30 docket, where you may have to wait 2 hours to be heard, we now have multiple courts where there's 9, 9:30, 10, 10:30, or some courts
well,
even
fantastic.
15 minutes. In criminal courts where it's 9, 10:30, 1:30, and 3 o'clock. And so when you go, the other side is expected to be there. They're in trouble. And when you go, you have time to be heard by the court. And I really hope that continues. But for a while, the family docket, only the respondent or petitioner and only their attorney and only when they are called in from the hallway could appear. And there's a number of attorneys in Oklahoma City. Our busiest courthouse is the Oklahoma County Courthouse. And there are days that there's 1,000 people in that building, and it still doesn't feel like a very safe place. And so there's complaints about how dockets are still being handled. But there's a variety of things that different courts have done, and we've seen varied success. One thing I really hope continues is that non-dispositive hearings can be done by video conference, and dockets can be staggered. We've had a lot of clients in juvenile court, still do, and almost all of those appearances have been by video, which short of a jury trial, and I think that a jury trial could potentially be conducted with the right video equipment where everyone's in their office. If the jury can, you know, see and feel the emotion from the attorneys and witnesses. But I hope that the use of technology continues to increase. And our firm certainly hopes that it does. We're in Edmond, Oklahoma. That's a suburb on the north side of Oklahoma County. And it's a 25-30 minute drive from our office to Oklahoma County Courthouse, or the federal courthouse in the Western District of Oklahoma, or Oklahoma City Municipal Courthouse. And it's a much further drive to other places. I had an Article 32 hearing on a military justice action at Fort Sill this morning, and I left my office at 6 a.m. And I had court at the Federal Magistrate Courthouse in Lawton this morning, and I had to be there in person. So I hope that with technology that we have and the security that does exist and hopefully will continue to improve, that more and more court appearances and hearings even, or trials, can be conducted by video because of all the benefits to the parties and the savings on the community or the environment, if you want to reference fewer miles or fewer emissions from vehicles. But I think it'd be amazing to see courthouses that have fewer people and many more things being done with the technology that exists and is used in a lot of other spheres of our economy and businesses outside of the legal sphere.
Oh, that's great. Isn't there a criminal case that did start, a trial actually in Texas, was it?
I'm not certain, but I know there's been discussion by attorneys and some judges here about considering doing video conference hearings. I've been in a court martial action where we had witnesses that appeared by teleconference or by video conference. That will only happen because they were abroad. We had a witness that was appearing by video conference in Germany for a court martial at Fort Sill. However, it'd be great to see that continue to increase and use that technology so people can appear where they're at. And I know that there are concerns, and attorneys speak to this for depositions and other things, that, well, what if somebody's feeding someone answers, or somebody has a board up behind them that is showing them what they should say, or things like that. Right. But the people that are thinking up ways to cheat, there are people that will think up ways to stop people from cheating. And I have I had a good friend who did a trial in person a few months ago in Oklahoma County, and a witness had answers written for tons of questions in the transcript that he had been given to review as part of his testimony. And that didn't come out till after trial, but this witness was reading answers to the pre-prepared questions on what was supposed to be a demonstrative exhibit. So people will try and find a way to cheat any system, and I think there are tools that can be put in place to stop people from cheating appearing in court by video.
That's right. It was just at the beginning of August. It was a Texas court held the first U.S. jury trial by video somehow. And I don't know how that went, like how it actually ended, or if it, you know, went on, or if they ended up with hiccups, but I'll have to look into that, because I'd be curious to see, you know, what the outcome or the experience was like for both jurors as well as, you know, the defendants and whatnot.
Absolutely.
Well, I appreciate you lending us, you know, your insight and experiences into this crazy last 6 months or 7 months, whatever we're on now at this point. John, I really do. It's, you know, it's been a roller coaster for everybody, but the fact that you're still going strong, and I think one thing I'd be curious for, because you do practice different, you know, areas of some attorneys don't. They just solely focus on criminal, which I know that was really different. But do you think that helped carry you through some of slower periods, was having, you know, the ability to take on personal injury, take on family, or happen to be the case?
I think so. I found from the inception of my law firm that some amount of diversity has been really important. And the family law practice that now is run by my associate, Doug Elliott, and that our junior associate, Madeline Sawyer, does a lot of the work for, has been instrumental to the firm's success. But there are times that the criminal defense practice is slow and then it picks back up, and the personal injury practice will be slow and pick back up. So my personal belief and our experience has been having at least two things that are completely separate from each other. As long as you have the bandwidth of people that can become experienced in that and work solely in that area and be dedicated to that. I don't handle our family cases anymore. And we've got an associate that doesn't do any criminal practice. And so those people being able to focus on those clients, those issues, learning, internalizing that law, that procedure, has been powerful for not only our experience level in those areas, but also maintaining the practice when one area may slow down while others keep going.
Absolutely. That's a fantastic marketing and business plan right there. Well, again, John, I really want to thank you for your time. I know you're a busy guy, especially, you know, today on, what are we, on a Friday here? This is really a treat.
I hope so.
Yeah. If there's any, you know, parting words or any last minute advice that you could share or would like to share with any of our attorneys who are listening out there, they tend to be small firms, you know, solo or maybe two or three other attorneys who are all in, you know, we're all in these similar boats this season. So if there's anything else you can, you know, think of that you'd like to share with them, please. Or also, like I said, keep an eye out for our podcasts and our newsletters, where we'll be sharing this information with everyone so everyone can kind of grow and learn from each other.
Sure. A couple of things that I wanted to make sure that I put out that have been instrumental for us is just a few things. One, systemization. I found that the systems we have in place, following them, reviewing them, updating them, and getting people to embrace them has been hugely beneficial to our team's success, whether it's in marketing, sales, production, staff issues, financial issues, setting and maintaining goals and reviewing them on a regular basis. Second, I would say, know who you are and be that person, be that firm. You don't have to be the person down the street. You don't have to be your mentor. Embrace who you are and then be that 100%. And I found that doing that shows people that you're real and that you care about them, whatever your personality may be. Also find people that compliment you. I'm not great at lots of things, but we've got people in the firm that are. And so finding people that balance out your skills. And the final thing would be, one of the greatest things that's added to our success is giving potential clients information and content. And so we try and regularly put useful content that answers questions on our website. And we've been slacking, but we try and put YouTube videos up to do the same thing. And we have blog posts multiple times a week that give information. And we found that's been a huge basis for our success in giving people content regularly and making that website grow, the YouTube videos grow, and just give. And we found it's amazing how successful you can be when you just help people.
Well, that is fantastic advice. And I appreciate you sharing this with everybody. Well, I thank you again, sir. And I wish you a great weekend ahead. And we will look forward to seeing you in the newsletter and then also everyone listening to this podcast. I think everyone's going to get a lot of good information out of it. So I appreciate everything you do for us, sir.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Have a good one.
You too.
You've been listening to the Secrets of Attorney Marketing podcast from Speakeasy Marketing. Call 888-225-8594 or email rj@speakeasymarketinginc.com to enhance your reputation and outmarket your competitors. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast and post a review.